Welcome, everybody. Let me help you envision, explore, and execute your plans. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. If creating a family has always been your passion, then you'll want to meet today's guest, John McNeese. Before we get started today, I just want to make sure you know you can go to motivatemepodcast.com, and there you're going to find our show notes, links to all of the resources mentioned. You'll find an application to be on the show. You'll have access to our email, and we can direct you to the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook page, because nothing matters more to me than to connect with my listeners. So I hope I can do that starting right now. So, John, welcome to today's show. I know that you have something that I feel is really amazing that you're going to share with our audience today. So before we get started, can you tell me, is there a quote that has been inspirational or meaningful to you in some way?
As cliche as it may sound, family is everything. Not just so much as a, I don't mean it as a quote, it just is.
Okay, I like that.
Or another one that, you know, you hear, I've heard in the past is be fruitful and multiply, but I'm done multiplying.
You've done a good job so far. Can you do me a favor and tell everybody exactly why you're on today's show?
You and I spoke in the past about the importance of starting a family. And when I saw about your podcast and motivating others and, you know, my first inclination was, what can I do to help? As you and I spoke in the past, and said, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are get to be, you know, in their 30s and 40s, and they're single, and they're like, oh, I'm never going to meet anybody. I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to have the family. And I felt exactly the same way in my 30s, which is, you know, 15 years ago, late 20s, early 30s, that, you know, I had a failed marriage. I was, my parents had a failed marriage. And, you know, my own growing up life, there were good times, but there was dysfunction there too. And I wanted to do something better. I wanted to meet somebody and fall in love and live the dream, get a nice house in the suburbs and the kids and the whole bit. And it wasn't happening. As things fail, you tend to get, at least I did, the self-doubt tends to build and the self-confidence goes away. It's almost like a scale. The self-doubt goes one way and the self-confidence goes another way. And it's just not, you're not getting what you want.
John, I think that's a really great analogy. And I love that you're explaining what you see in your head because you're very visual and you're able to describe it that way. And I could definitely feel the weight of what you were saying when you brought into the analogy of a scale. And, you know, listeners, John is somebody that I knew. I've known for probably 20 years, although we don't see each other often now. During the karaoke phase, when my husband and I had our business, that's where I met John. So I did know him before he got married. I was actually at both of his weddings, but I knew him before he got married the first time, and then I knew him in between, and I knew him very intimately during his down seriousness phase when he was concerned about his future. We would have many conversations during the karaoke shows and afterwards at the diner, right, John?
Mm-hmm. We would.
And
it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. But you had a lot of feelings of doubt and, you know, kind of hopelessness about the whole thing. And you were always extremely passionate about family, even though your family was difficult for you. And you didn't have the best role modeling there, but you made it a priority to find somebody. So how did you do that?
It's funny too, because I was thinking about that very thing today. What put me where I'm sitting right now? I hate to say it this way, but I gave up. I stopped looking. And I know that's one thing that, you know, I have a couple of single friends, and the last thing they ever want to hear is, just stop looking, it'll happen. That's genuinely what I did. Lucy and I met online, but not on any dating site or anything. I was genuinely just cruising around in a chat room. Here she was, and, you know, sent her one message. Hi, how are you? Or whatever it was, or nice picture. I don't even remember what it was I said.
I just want to point out that you did send her a message. You didn't just see this person. You sent a message, you said hello, and then you left it out to the universe.
That was it. And it's just like, you know, you mentioned in your show on Friday that, you know, things can change in an instant. And that's exactly what happened. An hour or two later, we're on the phone. A couple days later, we're on our first date. A couple days later, we're on our second date. Then all of a sudden, it's a month or two later. Then all of a sudden, it's, you know, a few more months. Then it's, why don't we move in together? We met in November of 2003. We were married by October of 2005. So we're coming up on 10 years now.
Right. Did you have any hesitations along the way after you met, let's say you met Lucy, and then did you have hesitations, not necessarily about her, but about marriage or about moving forward? Where was your head in that game?
No, I did not have any hesitation whatsoever. I knew she was it, and this was going to work. And at that time in my life, there were a lot of reasons not to be with me. I didn't have all my ducks in a row.
I actually remember having a conversation with Lucy on New Year's Eve one year, and she was a little frustrated with you, just, you know, like we get. And I looked her dead in the eye, and I said, Lucy, here is the thing about John. He wants to be everything you need, and he has the complete ability to be all of those things. Just tell him. Just tell him what you want him to do, and I promise you, he will do that. And like you said, you just didn't have your ducks in a row. You didn't have the good role modeling. You needed somebody to guide you in the right direction. And trust me, you are your own person. We all know that. She walked you by the hand probably. And, you know, you guys learned together how to do it.
I mean, I do all the laundry in the house, but I couldn't find my socks without her. You know, I knew, you know, the instant that was... And it was funny because I'd gone out with so many people, and for a while, you're like, you're with somebody for a while. You want them to be the one so bad that you convince yourself they are. You know deep down they're not. You want it so bad, but you know and you don't know. And I knew when her and I met, everything seemed to fall into place. We've talked about that conversation on New Year's Eve before, and it's like, you know, there was just no way that either one of us could ever see each other without the other one. And that's exactly what happened. It just, there were a couple of things. And like I said, just not to go into details, but just getting my ducks in a row and, you know, life and responsibility and things like that.
Right. And she held you accountable, which was exactly what you needed.
She did. She did. And, but you know, she loved me enough to say, where anybody else in the world would have said, listen, get your shit together and then we'll talk. She did exactly that. Pretty much took me by the hand and, you know, I don't want to say molded me, but she got me to where I needed to be. And I don't know where I'd be without her now, but you know, I know where I am. I know where I am with her, and that's all that quite frankly matters to me.
Yeah. And I think that's how you know when it's the right person, when your imperfections are just that, they're just imperfections, you know, and they're there to help you and to guide you. And so I know that your quest has always been to get exactly what you have, which, by the way, you have a son and identical twin daughters.
I do.
So you have three kids and an awesome wife who's intelligent and on fire. Your wife, by the way,
she's amazing.
She is amazing.
We'll sit at the dinner table and we'll look at each other, and one of them will say or do something, and she'll go, yours, and I'll do the same thing, yours, and you know, that's definitely, you know, and then we'll, you know, that one is definitely yours, and then, you know, it just becomes a game. I think Lexi said something last night. I wish I could remember what it was, but Allison looks up at all of us and goes, yours, and then goes back to eating, and we're like, just, I don't know, it's so funny.
They get
really
it.
Cute.
They get the joke.
Yeah, it's either that or they're just repeating what they hear. But one way or another, it's always fun. It's not always, you know, a toothpaste commercial and rosy cheeks and everything's wonderful and blah, blah, blah. You know, there's times where kids get crazy. And, you know, when there's three kids running around, there's going to be a fight. You know, you break it up and move on to the next thing. But, you know.
Well, personally, I think you're doing a really great job.
I have my moments, but thank you.
Well, you know, I always ask my guests, what was, you know, the disappointment along the way? And I think based on what you were saying about when you meet people and you always think they're going to be the one, you always want them very much to be the one. It sounds like you did that with your first marriage. You really wanted her to be the one. And then it was disappointing when you found out this marriage isn't going to work. Would you say on your journey here to achieve what you now have?
Yeah, I definitely learned from the entire experience. I mean, I was, you know, my first marriage, and certainly nothing against her. We were right for each other that at that time. And then we were a little bit different in age. And I started to want different things, and she started to want different things. And we genuinely, the exact conversation was, look, before this gets bad, let's just shake hands and move on. And you live your life and we part friends, and I'll live my life, and, you know, everybody will move on, and best of luck to everybody. No marriage ending is that easy, but it almost was. It was just like, look, before this becomes, you know, a domestic dispute, which it never did, but let's just move on. That's what we did. But what had happened was, here I was 22 when I got married the first time. I was, and then 6 years later, I wasn't even 30, and that marriage dissolved. And now I'm like, well, maybe I'm just destined to not be married and do the family thing. And my own parents were divorced. My parents provided for us. But as far as painting the picture or setting up the model for, and both of my parents, my mother and my father, my father's remarried now, but my stepmother doesn't come into the equation at all. Both of my mother and my father didn't exactly paint a picture of what a structured family life should be. I would see other families, my friends' families, or even, you know, relatives that you visit from time to time, and it's like, wow, they're doing things a lot different. These kids aren't fighting with each other. The parents don't seem to be fighting with each other. They seem to be helping each other, and this is different. You know, this isn't certainly what is going on in my life. But I always wanted that. I yearned for it. I just wanted normalcy, you know. And again, it's not, no family's perfect, and I understand that. But I saw it, and I wanted it so bad. And I think that's what drove me into my first marriage. And then when we realized that we weren't in it for the same things, it failed. And then I saw, you know, shortly there before, I saw my parents' marriage fail, and that didn't go well at all. And I thought, well, maybe this is it for me. I've done what I have to do, and I'm not getting that. But one of the first things I said, and I think that conversation might have been with you, is I'm not getting married or having kids, nothing. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to live my life. And I had that little shoebox apartment on the beach, and life was going to be great. And that lasted for a few months.
And then what happened?
I met somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be great, and everything's going to be wonderful. And she actually had a kid, wonderful girl, you know, they both were. I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be great. And she wants more kids, and, you know, this is fantastic. Everything's going to, you know, work out. And, you know, in everything I do, I'm a glasses half full guy. I mean, I always see the good in everything. You know, at least I try to really, really hard. Because if you don't see the good in anything, you're not going to see good in
anything.
Yeah, if you run around just being negative all the time, it's just not worth it. I just like to think that everything is going to work.
Yeah, that's that level, you know, one victim energy. It's no good.
But then it became, well, on her part, is I do want this. I don't want this. I don't want this. It's like, look, I need like just something solid here. Thanks, but no thanks. And we moved on, and again, parted friends. I don't think I've ever been with somebody that broke up really, really bad. It was just like, look, hey, this isn't working out. Thanks, but no thanks. And good luck to you and your life.
I just want to draw to your attention the fact that you made a decision there. And I think that you made a decision during a really pivotal moment. I think a lot of people get into relationships and then they stay too long. And you said to yourself and eventually to her that, no, I'm not going to tolerate that, because that's not my ultimate goal. I'm not going to spend and waste time with somebody who doesn't want the same things as me now.
I still stayed in that relationship too long, but
everybody always feels like everything was too long. That's one of the things, a common theme in the shows is everybody wishes they started earlier in whatever their passion was. For you, your passion is your family, the one you've created now. But you know what? Until you experienced all those other steps, John, you wouldn't know how great what you have now is, and you wouldn't probably have achieved it in quite the same way.
No, it's funny too. In fact, I was talking to somebody the other day that they were saying that their significant other has baby fever, and my answer to that is, you know what? It happens when it's supposed to happen. And I like instant gratification. You know, I want everything. I want what I want, and I want it now.
That's Veruca from Willy Wonka.
Veruca Salt, exactly.
I want it, and I want it now, Daddy.
I don't look as good in that little red dress, though. But that's what it was. Is like, you know, I knew what I wanted. Why don't I have it now?
You didn't have it then because life is a process. You had things to experience to make you the person you are right now.
And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, as far as when it'll happen, I had plenty of opportunity to have children before I was married, before I even met Lucy. I'm not saying that in any kind of suggestive way, but there were times where, you know, you're with somebody for a few months. Hey, let's have a kid. Just pops out somewhere. Not necessarily from me, but the other person's like, look, I want children, but it's going to be with somebody. Single parenting, God bless them. My ex-sister-in-law is a single mother. And God bless that woman. She works so, so hard to raise her two kids. Significantly on her own. Her parents help quite a bit, but she is... God bless her. She works so hard for those two. You know, it's like, look, when I have kids, I'm going to do it the old-fashioned, traditional way. I'm going to get married. And then we're going to find a house. And, you know, I'm going to do with the picket fence. And then I'm going to have my kids. And Lucy has always been the planner in our relationship. I'm kind of somewhat whimsical and let's just do it, man. And she had this plan that we're going to find a house and we're going to, you know, we're going to get married and then we're going to find a house and then we're going to have our children. I was 36 the day we signed the paperwork in the house. And I said, well, let's go. You know, it's time. You know, my biological clock is ticking, you know.
Would you say when Daniel was born, that was your big, did you feel that was your success moment in your life that, okay, I had the wife, I have the house and I have the baby now. Everything's accomplished.
At that time, I can honestly say that I was overcome with emotion two times up to that day, the day of my wedding. I stood before Lucy and I looked at her. She was beautiful. And I knew it had all come. And I think I actually called you that morning because you heard a lot of it. You heard all the good. You heard all the bad too. You know, in the single dating days, you heard a lot of the horror stories and the good ones, but you heard them all. But it was like, it's here. I met her. I'm standing here. I'm marrying this woman. What in the hell she sees in me, I don't know. But God bless her, you know, that I'm the luckiest son of a bitch on earth to be marrying this woman. And I still say that to this day. And I always, you know, typical husband jokes, you know, on our anniversary, like, see how lucky she is to keep me for, you know, 8, 9, 10 years. But there's no two ways in my mind. But my point was, I was totally overcome with emotion, and I heard people chuckling because my face just welled up. I was teared up. I was so, so overcome that, you know, I got, at that point, everything I'd ever wanted.
I was overwhelmed for you, too.
Not that I'm any tougher than anybody else, but I don't cry in public. Unless...
Maybe sometimes.
Unless I'm somewhat inebriated. But, you know, sober, I never cried in front of people. So, and my kids still bring tears to my eyes. At least it's not so much every day anymore. But, there's at least once or twice a week that it happens. I get all proud of them. Something big in their lives happened that they're really happy about. And I get overwhelmed. We went through a lot with my daughters. But so that gets me even more. But the minute I met him, I just wanted help, you know, 10 fingers and 10 toes when it came to wanting children. If I had to pick, as much as a big 7-year-old boy that I am, you know, sure I wanted a boy, but I would have been happy no matter what. When we found out we were having a boy, I was just elated. And then when I met him for the first time, you know, it was a long day. I could tell you everything about that day. I could document the entire thing pretty much hour by hour from the minute we got to the hospital to the minute I saw him. And it was 24 hours of labor for Lucy, God bless her, you know, only to end up having a C-section. But, you know, it was 24 hours of labor, and I'm at the point where I'm helping. The midwife actually said to me at one point, she says, "I don't know what you do for a living, but you need to stop and become a midwife." And I looked at her like, "Look, I'll do this for my own. I'm not doing this for anybody else. You know, I'll do this for my wife, but no. This is not, no." Perfectly happy with the welding equipment, and I can't cut the cord because she's under anesthesia. I'll never forget it. They were in there for, it couldn't have been 10 minutes. Felt like hours. Mm. I'm pacing back and forth outside in the hall, typical nervous dad. And the last thing I remember when she went into the operating room, I said to the doctor, I said, "I need to cut the cord." And it was somewhat symbolic for me. And I know she was going through a lot, but he says, "Listen, I've been through, you know, I've been doing this all day with her. At least let me cut the cord," basically.
Right.
And he says, "I can't, but I'll leave some on there." And, you know, the nurse brought him out and I got to cut a little bit off.
Right.
So I was okay with that. But the minute I laid the eyes on him, I just bawled. I was so happy. He was crying. I was crying. Here he was, you know, and he looked like me, you know, and all I could think about, and I'll tell you a funny thing that motivated me that day. When you're about to have your first kid, you always wonder, you know, well, I better not screw this up. I never questioned whether or not I would be a good father, because it doesn't matter to me if I'm a good father. It matters to him if I'm a good father. Matters to both, you know, all three of my children. Matters to my wife if I'm a good father. I don't need to be a good father for me. I need to be a good father for them. But I'm walking down the hall. I went down. My mother was there. My father was there. His wife was there. My brother and his wife were there in the hospital. And I was only allowed to bring two people with me. So my mother had gone to the bathroom. She had already seen him once. You know my family history there. They were on opposite sides of the waiting room. So my father says to me, as we're walking down the hall, when I first started having kids, as if I'm, you know, standing there, "It was just something you did. Now it's like a really big deal." And I was like,
"Oh,
I got this."
Right.
You know, and I, at that point, that's when I knew that I was like, you know, I don't like negative motivation, but now you've kind of set the bar. You know, you kind of, now I know why I want this, because I know I can do a better job than you.
This ends part one of my discussion with John McNeese. Now, you know, this episode was all about how to create a family, but John went into some really great details I felt were extremely touching, about when his son was born, when his twin daughters were born, his wife, Lucy, obtaining the house, the dream. It's very touching and very real. But there was something else that was important to John that I know is also important to a lot of my listeners. So because of that, we're splitting this interview into two parts. Today was how to acquire the family, but tomorrow is how to nurture it, how to respect it, how to value it, how to keep it. So please listen to part two tomorrow.